Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 7th of March. Mondays at 1 o'clock, all things political. And we're delighted to have Jamel Bui with our all things political analysis this hour. He is chief political correspondent for Slate.com. We had caucuses and primaries over the weekend, a Democratic debate in Flint, Michigan last night, which was really quite moving. The questions from the audience were heartbreaking. Michigan, Hawaii, Idaho, Mississippi. Tomorrow we'll have elections. Hawaii and Idaho Republicans only. Michigan and Mississippi Republican and Democratic primaries. Jamel has written some, well, he always writes interesting pieces, but he says Republicans need to say if Trump is the nominee, they will not support him. It's the only step, Jamel writes, that might shatter Trump's coalition or, in the fall, keep party unity from giving Trump a fighting chance, ending his viability as a general election candidate. He'll respond to last night's Democratic debate in Flint. He's written some interesting pieces about Hillary Clinton's strong support from black voters and says that President Obama really laid the groundwork here with a campaign of dedicated outreach and contacting newly activated people who are going to vote. A number of black voters, he contacted them with this amazing ground operation and brought them into the process. And two presidential cycles of this successful contact, Jamel writes, have had an effect. We'll talk about that and whatever else you'd like to discuss as this primary season, this endless season, continues with interesting discussions. And we welcome your phone calls, as we always do. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Jamel. Thanks for being with us. It's great to have you as a guest again. Hello.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. You wrote recently, if GOP leaders really want to stop Trump, they need to be willing to lose the election.
That's right. One of the interesting things, or for me, just as an observer, frustrating things about the GOP's anti-Trump effort is that whenever candidates are asked, and we saw this at the last Republican debate, when they're asked, would you support Trump in the general election? They say, yes, we would. But I think this neutralizes any potential effect of the anti-Trump attacks, because the attacks tend to be that Trump is a danger to the Republican Party, that he is a danger to the country, that he is unacceptable. And once you say that, it follows that you wouldn't support him. But if you say you would, then everything else you just said is sort of a moot point. It's just sort of typical primary rhetoric. And so I think Republicans would be well served, if they oppose Trump, to say, we would not support him in the nomination. We do not think the Republican Party should be led by him. And that doesn't mean they have to endorse Democrats at all, but simply saying Trump is a bridge too far for us, I think would have the broader effect of encouraging, you know, Trump skeptical Republican voters to stick with their skepticism and not feel that they have to rally behind the party or rally behind the nominee.
So, Jamel, why don't they say that?
I think there's a couple reasons. The first is that, and this is an argument I've heard from conservatives, that going that far would limit their ability to reach people. And that already the kinds of attacks made on Trump, and so Mitt Romney, for example, gave her that unprecedented speech in a lot of ways, attack, kind of essentially disavowing himself from Trump as a potential nominee. The argument is that is enough for now, that we haven't quite gotten to the point where there needs to be a full disavowal. I also think that for some Republicans, there is sort of the feeling that if Trump is a nominee, they still want to be able to have influence within the Republican Party, and that means getting behind whoever is the nominee, since openly coming out against the nominee would help guarantee that the party couldn't win the White House.
Do you think we still may see some of these candidates say, I will not support Donald Trump?
I think it depends on how things go. My suspicion, though, is that yes, at least one of the remaining candidates, if Trump becomes nominee, may outright say that he would not support them. If I had to guess, it would be Rubio, who has had the most aggressive rhetoric against Trump among the remaining candidates thus far. But I'm not sure. That's a hard prediction to make.
Mm-hmm. It is a pretty amazing thing, isn't it? And there are so many acts that have taken place recently of, you know, violence against people who are in the audience at some of his events. This whole thing of raising your right hand and making a pledge, which had overtones that you couldn't help but notice. There is something deeply troubling about all of it.
I think so. One of the things that has really disturbed me as a viewer of the primary this far is the degree to which some attendees at these Trump rallies really seem to see, I don't know, like aggressive handling of protesters, occasional violence as an acceptable way to participate. And Trump doesn't seem to be bothered by it at all. And I've talked to quite a few people, not at Trump rallies, but sort of at other Republican events, at Democratic events, who are worried that eventually that will really get out of hand and someone will get hurt for real.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at their debate last Thursday, wasn't it? There's so many of them, the days kind of run into each other, Jamil. But last Thursday's debate was, where was a conversation about all the important issues that the country is facing? It was wild.
That's right. It was much more of a match of insults between the candidates than it was a discussion of any issues. And I think that's been the case of the Republican debates for a while now. Quite a bit of discussion about Trump and attempts to take Trump down, and very little talk of any of the issues or problems that are salient to a lot of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it's worth noting that at last night's Democratic debate, both Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders made this point, contrasting the tenor of their debate with the tenor of the Republican debate.
Last night's debate was so moving, wasn't it? To have it in Flint, to hear from all of those people whose lives have been so hurt by this water crisis. What a contrast in audience and so many really difficult issues and voices and at least airtime being given to people who really need to be heard in Flint.
That's right. It was, you know, this was, I think, a late scheduled debate, and the effort was to, you know, bring something that's in the news, that's very relevant to Democratic voters, directly to the candidates. And it was, I think, a good exercise for everyone involved, at least from the candidate side, to have to take discussions which can sometimes be abstracted and bring them to the lived experiences of actual people.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that in future elections, or even in the time we have left in this one, this approach is used more and more. Because I think it was helpful to the candidates. It allowed them to approach these questions from a different perspective or a different approach. And it was good for viewers who may not have known the extent of the damage in Flint.
We have certainly seen, and I'm glad you wrote about this because you shed new light on it, I believe, Hillary Clinton really in Southern State, at least after Southern State. We'll see what happens in Michigan tomorrow, but certainly gathering huge support from African-American voters. You write about President Obama laying the groundwork, his campaign, and he had an incredible campaign. We saw it in 2008. Black voters, you write, increasingly regular voters, and seem to believe in their efficacy as voters, that if they organize and vote, they will change things for the better. So you give him some credit for that groundwork. I think that that's something that maybe we overlook.
I think so. I think that the misconception among casual observers and even some professional ones is that the high African-American turnout of the 2008 and 2012 elections was a function basically of Obama's star power, that black voters saw Barack Obama and came to the polls as a result. But there is quite a bit of research which suggests that what happened wasn't that black voters simply came out for Obama, and in fact, his, I'll just call it star power, seems to be a modest, if not marginal, variable in bringing black voters out. But that Obama, because of his connections to the African-American community, was able to build a mobilization strategy that really reached deep into black communities and black civic organizations. And those communities and civic organizations, once organized, became essentially a machine for turnout. And I think, I think a couple elections have borne this out, but definitely the primaries thus far, I think the legacy of that operation sustained over two presidential cycles is that many black voters have just become exceptionally regular voters,
mm-hmm.
And will come out just as a matter of course, which does change the electoral landscape a little bit. It makes it more friendly to Democrats. In states like Virginia, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, sort of the classic swing states.
Let's talk about Senator Sanders for a little while. He did very well, and he's doing very well in many caucuses in this country. I want to ask you why that seems to be the case, a whole different process. What is it about the caucuses that made people more inclined to vote for him? But you also write about he's pulling Hillary Clinton somewhat to the left, and you say now is the time for Bernie Sanders to construct a Sanders wing of the Democratic Party that will push and advocate for social democracy.
So, you know, with regards to caucuses, I think what's happening is that caucuses as sort of a way of voting rewards enthusiasm, because you have to go there, you have to stay there, you can't just walk in and out. And so candidates who have exceptionally enthusiastic supporters, I think, are more likely to do well in caucuses. And it's also the case that the caucus states thus far have been disproportionately white, and have had larger than usual proportions of young voters. And so that, again, benefits Sanders. I think the analog in the Republican primary is Ted Cruz, who also has a similar ideological appeal to very conservative voters. And Republican caucuses as well have been held in states where voters like that, and evangelical voters in particular, have dominated, which helps Cruz. So I think it's the combination of enthusiasm plus structure, which makes caucuses or makes caucus states a good place for Senator Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
As far as his, I think, goals as a candidate, and why I argue that he should stay in the race, even though just the calendar of primaries suggests that he will steadily fall behind, is because he is accomplishing something very unique. He is a self-described socialist and independent who only recently became a Democrat, and he is giving Hillary Clinton a very robust challenge for the nomination, and he has the support and the resources to continue this through to the convention. And I don't see any reason why he shouldn't, if his goal is to pull the Democratic Party to the left.
Now is the time to endorse down ballot candidates. Have the Democrats done that?
Not yet. Although Hillary Clinton has done fundraising for the Democratic National Committee on the order of $18 million. And she says that this is for helping state parties get a foothold as the election approaches.
We're going to welcome phone calls. There's so much to discuss. It's hard even to list all of the things that have happened since the last time we had an All Things Political. We've had a lot of caucuses. We have had a couple debates, a Democratic debate, a Republican debate. We've had a number of people, Republican leadership, who have come out strongly, including Mitt Romney, against Donald Trump. but nobody totally disavowing him as a candidate and saying they wouldn't vote for him. Would it make sense for Republicans to do that? Is that the only way really to stop the Trump movement? We're looking at African American vote for Hillary Clinton and why that is happening to the extent it is, what Bernie Sanders is doing to really create an agenda, a Sanders wing, Jamil calls it, of the Democratic Party that will push and advocate for social democracy. It's a message that seems to be resonating, particularly among the young in the country at this particular time. What do you make of the debates? What do you make of the primary and caucus results? What about what's ahead? We certainly love to hear from you. We're in the thick of it now, everybody. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. And Jamil Bowie is our guest for all things political. He is chief political correspondent for Slate.com. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's get some phone calls going. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for our all things political. What do you make of all that's going on? We start with Tim in Lake Geneva. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Kathleen. Another wonderful show. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
And I'd like to say that I felt the same way about Bernie Sanders. I get a lot of these surveys while the events are going on. And last night, I actually selected Bernie as being the winner, one on top there. But through it all, it's a lot. Their conversation is very touching. It's very current. It's very up to date. It really makes you think. I don't watch the GOP debates. I think they're shameful, and I'm embarrassed to about them. But I do think that Bernie is a great motivator for getting all the things on the table that we need to be talking about: wages, Wall Street, the inequality of our system, and that's about my comment. And thank you again for having this program.
Thanks, Tim. Jamil, do you think Bernie was the victor last night?
I thought that both Sanders and Clinton did very well at sort of pushing their respective positions and kind of emphasizing their sort of qualities as candidates. I'm not really sure either candidate won, and I guess it's an unpopular opinion, but I'm not sure at this point. I'm not sure that at this point there really are winners or losers in these debates. Both candidates do well. Both candidates tend to accomplish their goals.
Mm-hmm. To go back to the Republican debate for just a moment, there was a storyline that emerged from the debate and from the results of the primaries over the weekend where Rubio did not do very well at all, that he was slinging mud and sort of going to the level of Trump in the Republican debate, and that strategy is perhaps one that he should have avoided. Do you agree?
I tend to agree, since it didn't work and it may have hurt Rubio's own standing, but it's also tough to see what Rubio can do, especially since he hasn't, or he's only won two primaries thus far. And so it's in this tough spot where his attacks on Trump don't really seem to work or resonate, but he has to do something, unless he kind of just seems like he's floating in the water. Unable to really respond to conditions. So he's in a difficult place.
Mm-hmm. We have an email wondering about who would be a Clinton running mate, wondering if the running mate question should be asked now.
It's probably a bit too early in the primary process to begin, or at least for the candidates to begin talking about running mates, but certainly us as observers can feel free to speculate all we'd like. And from what I understand, the likely candidates for a Clinton running mate range anywhere from Julian Castro, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development and former mayor of San Antonio, who is a rising star in the Democratic Party, along with his twin brother, Joaquin Castro. There is Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, who is a former governor of Virginia, who was actually on Obama's short list for vice president when he ran in 2008, and is generally well-liked, generally liberal, generally has a good record on issues that Democrats care about.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of dark horse candidates for vice president are Senator Amy Klobuchar.
From Minnesota.
From Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
There's always talk or, wishing that Elizabeth Warren would join the ticket, or that Clinton would ask Warren, or that Sanders would ask Warren. I tend to think that's not going to happen, or if it did, she wouldn't take it, in part because she's quite powerful in the Senate as it is, and under a Democratic president and likely Democratic Senate, she would be one of the most powerful and influential senators in the country, and that's no small thing for her priorities. And if she were the vice president under Clinton, she would be an advocate for the administration. And so I imagine that there'd be plenty of places where Senator Warren would disagree with President Clinton, and this would really neutralize her ability to be an opponent, frankly, of parts of the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Tim, for your call. We have lines open if you'd like to join our All Things Political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our guest believes that Rubio, Cruz, and Kasich, and all the other members of the Republican Party, as long as that they're willing to support Trump as the nominee, it doesn't matter what they say or how they insult him. He retains his stature, Jamel writes, as a legitimate figure in the Republican Party, which, as he accumulates votes and delegates, makes him harder to stop. So does it come down to a sense of morality, and should these leaders say that they would not vote for Donald Trump? We're talking about the Democratic debate. Well, we were talking about the Republican debate last week, which was a series of pretty gross insults thrown back and forth, not a whole lot of discussion of policy. We're talking about last night's Democratic debate in Flint, Michigan. We're talking about the caucuses and primaries that took place over the weekend in Michigan and Mississippi, and for the Republicans, Hawaii and Idaho, that will take place tomorrow. And just trying to get an assessment from you as to where you think things stand at this point. We welcome you to our lines. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Another email from Anita Jamel, who wonders why not too many people, she's a Hillary supporter, why not too many people are talking about international relations, their importance, and what their candidates' various stands are on international relations.
I think part of it is just that foreign policy isn't too salient for the Democrats this time around. In 2008, we were still sort of fighting the Iraq War, and the litmus test of the Democratic Party was a candidate's stance in the Iraq War, which is a large part of how Obama was able to even catch momentum in the race against Hillary Clinton. This time, and Bernie Sanders has, in every foreign policy discussion thus far, has reference Hillary's Iraq war vote, but it just doesn't seem to be the most important issue to most Democrats. Right now, the two competing concerns are preserving President Obama's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, and Sanders, on the other end, is arguing that President Obama's legacy is insufficient and that we need to go further. And that's where the party is right now. I mean, even after the Paris attacks last fall, there wasn't much of an appetite for shifting the tenor of the discussion to foreign policy.
And yet there was, when people were asked what are the most significant issues, terrorism at that time, and certainly after San Bernardino was really way up on the list, that's no longer the case, at least on the Democratic side.
That's right. Again, once it's out of the news, Democrats in this election just don't seem to be terribly concerned with foreign policy. I mean, even, one of Secretary Clinton's most controversial decisions in the Obama administration was her advocacy for the intervention in Libya, and that has largely been ignored in the Democratic primary. So, maybe another terrorist attack would bring it back into the Democratic frame of view. But at the moment, it's just not what Democrats are concerned about.
Dennis is next in Wautoma. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, Kathleen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
What I was going to say was, you know, I've been watching these Republican and Democratic debates. And, I mean, unless you're going back into the 1980s or your 70s and the Friars Club comedy roasts or some of Joan Rivers' insults on the red carpet for the Oscars or something, it's hard to equate anything you've seen on television with what you're seeing on this stage under the guise of a debate. And then at the end of it all, after throwing out absolutely horrendous insults at each other and calling each other everything short of cannibals, then they pledge to still vote for each other or vote at least for Trump, which is the height of hypocrisy at best. And when you compare that with what I've seen on the Democratic side, where now you've only got two people, but even when you had three people talking, they actually do discuss issues that matter to voters and people, and they're respectful of each other to the greater degree. I mean, it's just it's astonishing comparison or difference in types of discourse and in types of actions and behaviors.
And yet, Jamel, the ratings for the Republican debates, and well, for all of them, but the Republican debates are sky high. There must be a lot of people who enjoy that. Dennis, what do you think?
I think to some degree, people are tuning in for the comic value of it, or just to see how low will these people go. As to whether or not it's actually going to get them any voters, it's a question I could hardly tell you, but the fact remains, you know, if this is what passes for political discourse in this country at this point, at least on the Republican side, then, you know, the asylum is empty because everybody's out on the streets.
Jamel.
You know, I think that the high ratings for the Republican debates reflects just Republican interest in the election, but also I think these debates on the GOP side really have become a bit of a spectacle. I mean, I think that's why the networks are so eager to hold them. It is entertaining, even if it may be a little unbecoming for a presidential election. It's entertaining at least to watch the candidates go after each other like this. And as long as that's true, I think those ratings are going to be high.
Yeah. It is quite unbecoming, though, isn't it? When you think about it, when you watch it, you think these people are running for the presidency of the United States. Shouldn't it be a wee bit more elevated conversation?
On one hand, I want to say yes. On the other, the history of American elections shows that, you know, lowbrow attacks aren't really new. They're not novel. One of my favorites is from, and I just lost the election, but it's a 19th century election where one of the candidates was accused of having a child out of wedlock and basically hiding them away. And the cry against them was, you know, "Ma, ma, where's my pa?"
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that for the time was pretty scandalous. And so I think the current tenor of the Republican race is very, you know, with Trump, it's a bit vulgar, but that vulgarity isn't something that's unusual in the broad sweep of American politics.
Mm. Dennis, thanks very much for the call. Claire in Madison. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Claire.
This isn't why I called, but just to answer something your guest just said, unfortunately for all of us these days, this discourse on the right is all over TV, the internet. I as an American, am totally embarrassed for our nation because I think it's just disgraceful what's going on the right. But fortunately, I'm not a Republican. My questions for your guest are twofold. I was listening very carefully last night to the Democratic debate, and I have two questions for your guest. One, if Bernie is so pro-gun, as has been alleged, how does he have a D-minus rating with the NRA? And the other thing is, when they were discussing the Detroit bailout, I was taking very careful notes during the debate, and I could have sworn I heard Bernie say at one point that he did strongly support the bailout.
Jimmo.
Yes. So on the question of guns, this is one of those things where, kind of as a general rule, the National Rifle Association is tougher towards Democrats. And so Sanders, by virtue of being, even though he was an independent in the Senate, he voted pretty regularly with Democrats. He has a very liberal voting record. His support for, loose gun laws has not been as aggressive as many Republicans. He earns a lower rating kind of by default. Even if relative to other Democrats, he's probably a little friendlier than typical. On the Detroit bailouts, Sanders opposed them in one form, supported them in another. It's sort of one of these things. I mean, this is kind of the tricky thing about running for president as a senator. Now, oftentimes, you are voting on lots of things in many different forms. And it's very easy to spin any given vote as something outrageous or as something, courageous. And so a good example is on the Republican side. There's the ongoing argument about who supported the immigration bill. Ted Cruz and his attacks on Rubio has been himself attacked for supporting a path to citizenship. But Cruz will argue that the amendment he supported wasn't meant to pass. It was mostly meant as a poison pill amendment on the bill. But that's sort of a fine distinction that is you have to parse it. And parsing it never really looks good. And I think this is a bit of Sanders' problem.
Claire, thanks very much for the call. KP looked up this reference. It was the 1884 presidential campaign. James Blaine.
That's right.
Yeah. Mama, where's my pa? Gone to the White House, ha ha ha. Referring to Grover Cleveland, who had allegedly fathered a child.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
On the tip of my tongue was like Rutherford B. Hayes, but I knew that wasn't right, so I just decided not to.
No, it's
not
fine.
To say a name.
Yeah, they just looked it up for you, so now we know. Let's talk about thank you, Claire, for the call. Our number, by the way, it's All Things Political, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. There's been much made of this enthusiasm gap with Republicans going to these primaries and caucuses in record numbers and Democrats just not doing the same. What's that all about, Jamel?
Yeah, this is something I've been skeptical of what I think is the conventional take, which is that the enthusiasm difference between the Democrats and Republicans. So Republicans are seeing record turnout for their primaries and caucuses. Democrats are seeing turnout lower than 2008, which was the record turnout for the Democratic side. And in the argument that this may be suggests lower turnout for Democrats in the general election. But if you look at the pattern of primary turnout versus general election turnout, there really is no relationship between the two. In 2008, there was record turnout on both ends, but in 2004, high Democratic turnout didn't result in strong Democratic performance in the general election. In 2000, high Republican turnout did not result in Republicans winning the popular vote. In 1992, low Democratic turnout ended with Democrats winning the presidency. 1988 had the highest turnout prior to 2008 for Democrats, and the nominee, Michael Dukakis, lost in a landslide to George H.W. Bush. So just if you just look at the numbers, the connection isn't there. I think the only thing primary turnout really tells you is how excited a given party is for choosing a nominee, and you'll notice that the high points of turnout are after 8-year presidencies from the other party.
Mm-hmm.
And so 88, 8 years of Reagan, 2008, 8 years of Bush, 2000, 8 years of Clinton. And so the opposing party tends to be very, very excited to choose a nominee at the end of 8 years. And I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Interesting.
And it's worth noting that this year's turnout for Democrats is higher than it was in 2004. So it's not as if this is a low turnout. It's just not as high as a high watermark for the party.
I see. Bruce in Deerfield. Hi.
Hi. Let's see. I guess my comment is that I agree with almost all the other callers about how sort of embarrassing this whole process has been. But one of the things that really bothers me has been the role of the media. And I guess, I'm not quite sure exactly how to express this, but I get on a hunch, I get the feeling that it's, that a lot of what they do is to just kind of stir the pot and jack people up and, you know, to sort of make the programming more exciting. You know, it's too much like a sporting event. And this whole question about who won the debate, who didn't win the debate, I think is really not the important question. Did anybody really learn anything about any of these people? And, you know, how well did this person do, you know, on that level? And then the other part of it is I get so tired of their panels of pundits and quote-unquote political experts. I wish they would kind of go to their Rolodex and find, you know, people who knew something about these different issues.
That's a good point.
Really had on-the-ground opinions.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. There are so many people who live in this country who have studied all of this pretty carefully. It is interesting. And I wonder why that is, Jamel. We'll have to ask you to put on your media analyst hat here. But why is it that you get the same people? I understand the horse race thing now because we're in the thick of it. You know, do you want, people want to know the results and the breakdown of the vote in the various primaries and caucuses. But to get a really in-depth background discussion, we get the same people on the air all the time talking about what's going on. There are a lot of great minds in the country.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a media booker or producer. My hunch is that, you know, oftentimes those are the people who are readily available, as in so many things. Producers and bookers look for the people they know and are who are relatively reliable and who they trust. And so that's that, you know, that ends up being the same people on over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I think it would be helpful to have more experts commenting on the election. But it's worth noting that there are plenty of experts who feel uncomfortable doing that kind of media work. And so the expert or the scholar who is very good on TV, comfortable talking about their work, is not the most common thing in the world. There are plenty of them out there. But it's not, you know, they're a little less ubiquitous than I think talking heads are.
Yeah. But isn't it interesting, just what you've talked about this hour, that is no part of the conversation here, when you gave us the background of voter turnout in all of those elections, I haven't heard that widely discussed, or the kind of mudslinging that took place in the 1884 presidential campaign, for heaven's sake. Who's talking about that? That would be a fascinating discussion to have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think some of it, at least among your sort of the kinds of people you typically see on television, it's just, you know, people have their talking points. They have their sense of what's happening. I myself have a bit of a slightly contrarian mind. And so whenever, you know, I hear something that seems like it should be right, I always ask myself if it is in fact right. Which sometimes leads to helpful answers, as is the case with this turnout question.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, I mean, that's just not the case for everyone.
Yeah.
And so
the other thing, and I can't remember who did this or what the percentage was, it is true that all of the networks, liberal-leaning networks, you know, middle-of-the-road, right-leaning networks, have devoted an inordinate amount of time to Donald Trump. They run his speeches all the time. He's all over the place. He's had a whole lot more exposure, I think, than anybody else.
That's right. And I think that's in part because he, you know, he drives ratings.
Right.
The Trump phenomena is, for a lot of people, entertaining. And so, you know, networks are trying to make sure they have content, are trying to satisfy audiences. And Trump is an easy way to do that.
More phone calls in a moment. It's all things political. We always have these conversations on Mondays, and now we're in a presidential year, so we have all kinds of things to talk about. Jamelle Bouie has been our guest on All Things Political for a number of years now. He's chief political correspondent for Slate.com. And here is how you reach our conversation. Thank you very much for your good points, Bruce. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for Jamelle. I and Steve in Danbury is next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Kathleen and guests.
Hi, Steve.
You know, the whole turnout thing is largely a myth when you start looking. I think it's been promulgated by CNN and other networks, but look at the Louisiana primary results for last Saturday. On the Democratic side, there were 311,000 votes. On the Republican side, there were 301,000 votes. This is a Republican state. Hillary Clinton outpolled Trump by about almost 100,000.
Mm.
Look at the Minnesota caucuses, 191,000 votes on the Democratic side to 111,000 on the Republican side. So when you start looking closely, I don't think it's true that, across the board anyway, that turnout has been much greater on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm. What about enthusiasm? Do you think that there is an equal amount of enthusiasm? I know it's hard to measure, Steve, but is that important for us to think about?
Well, I don't know how you measure enthusiasm. I think on the Republican side, there's a sizable number of people who are turning out because they don't want to see Donald Trump get the nomination. So I guess if that's enthusiasm, you could say yes. Obviously, the greater number of candidates generates more interest from a wider segment of people, so you've got that going on the Republican side versus the Democratic side as well. But I think once it gets down to Trump, as in all likelihood it may well be, or Cruz versus Hillary, as in all likelihood it may well be, I think you're going to see enthusiasm roughly the same on both sides. The incentives will be different, the motivation will be different, but I think the enthusiasm, I think, will be fairly equal on the two sides.
Thank you so much, Steve. Jamelle?
I think that's right. I think once the general election comes around, I mean, this is why political parties exist. They exist to generate enthusiasm and bring people to the polls. And it's also worth noting that political scientists have identified a phenomenon called negative partisanship, in which people are less – it's not that people are coming out to vote for their party as much as they're coming out to vote against the other side. And I think that if Trump is the nominee, you'll see a lot of that on the Democratic side. There are reports that Latino voter registration, for example, is jumping up in part because a lot of unregistered Latino – unregistered Latinos who nonetheless are eligible to vote want to be able to vote against Trump.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Buck in Sturgeon Bay. Is it? Hi, Buck.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not a very political person, so my views are not real in depth. But, you know, I usually vote Republican because they most match most of my preferences in life. But, you know, when Trump started getting popular, I think he got a lot of people stirred up and excited because he was not the establishment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on and he became a little more outspoken and a little crazy almost, I told my friends in our group discussions, I go, you know, I don't even think he really wants to win. I think he's just trying to shake things up to weed out people who don't have any future plans for us. And now as time goes on, I'm going, well, maybe he does want to win. And, you know, I wouldn't vote for him in the primary, but if he wins the Republican nomination, I'm probably going to have to vote for him.
Who would you, and, you know, who will you vote for?
Before I forget, you know, this thing of our politicians are silly and out of character. I think the whole world's politicians, I mean, we've seen people getting shoes thrown at them, brawls and Britain, you know, I mean, all politicians, I think, are just a little crazy.
And who will you support in the primary, Buck?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess right now the lesser of my evil choices is Cruz.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks very much for calling. Jamelle.
You know, I think I'm not sure that all politicians are a little crazy. It kind of depends on, I guess, what you mean by crazy. I think Trump is unique in his willingness to exploit prejudice, whether it's against immigrants or against Muslim Americans. I do think that the caller illustrates something that I said earlier, which was there are plenty of Republicans will get behind Trump if he wins the nomination. And sort of the question for party leaders is, do they want to encourage that, or do they want to try as much as they can to discourage it?
Thank you, Buck. And what about his point? We've heard little inklings of this, that Trump really maybe surprised himself by how he caught on, and he's not all that interested in being president. I don't think you go to the elaborate measures he does with the podium and the flags and all of this and a rigorous schedule unless you want to be president.
Yeah, I think that's right. If there was a point where Trump was not so invested in this, we've long passed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trump is very much invested in winning because he sees that he can.
Yeah, exactly. Chelsea in Madison, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to talk about how I feel that Bernie Sanders has been really left out of the media, especially mainstream, and how I feel it hasn't really been talked about how much better Bernie Sanders will do against the Republican candidates or the possible Republican candidates compared to Hillary Clinton. And how well he's been polling with millennials and how he's really been bringing younger people to the polls. I feel like that's kind of been left out, and Hillary Clinton has kind of just been like the expected nominee for the Democratic Party.
Jamil.
This is, there are two things. The first is that for as much as it's true that Sanders' support comes disproportionately from younger voters and that they're very enthusiastic about him, this goes back to our earlier conversation about turnout. There really isn't any indication or evidence that Sanders has brought more voters than usual to the polls. And in fact, looking at turnout patterns, you can arguably say that he hasn't brought anyone new to the polls. We're just looking at a very enthusiastic group of people who would have been voting anyway. And so I think that is something to keep in mind, that Sanders has yet to demonstrate his ability to turn voters out versus someone like Trump who has been able to do that. As for head-to-head polls against Republicans, you know, the consensus among political scientists, at least, is that those kind of head-to-head polls don't really hold any predictive value. And the reason is that they're trying to measure an event that not only has not happened, but is still very much hypothetical. And so what you're asking people essentially is to take their vague feelings about two candidates and decide. But that's generally not how elections work. Mm-hmm. And so I think the consensus at this point is that head-to-head polls, especially with someone like Bernie Sanders, or for that matter, Donald Trump, are of unusually low predictive value because these are candidates who don't actually have, this isn't true of Trump, but certainly it's true of Sanders, don't have massive national profiles. And in the case of Sanders,
Jamil,
hasn't really, yes.
We're out of time.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we'll fill in the blank. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jamil Bowie, Chief Political Correspondent for Slate.com. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour and for on-air production as well. Don't forget, next hour's conversation. It's important.